my friends. It is the Shaggy Jenkins Show, the podcast edition. In this episode, covering the aftermath of the Maui wildfires, as we've been doing the last couple of episodes, I'll get into something today that you, listening somewhere not on Maui, might be suffering trauma from our wildfires without even knowing it. I'll get into some of the symptoms and all of that stuff as we get into the topic. First of all, I always have to have a brief introduction because people say, if you don't say hello to new folks, how are they ever going to know who you are, Shaggy? So, yeah, I'm working on it. My name is Shaggy. I am a radio personality on the beautiful Isle of Maui, which on August 8th suffered a major traumatic event. It was the wildfires. And I'm sure that my introduction of saying that even if you weren't here on Maui, you might be suffering trauma kind of has you like wondering how. Well, let me go ahead and explain for those of you that listen that aren't on the island right now. There does seem to be all across, well, literally every city that I've been to so far, there does seem to be kind of a shared, almost survivor's guilt, post-traumatic stress kind of syndrome thing going on with most of the population that lives here full time. The wildfires, you have to understand, in scale, was the largest natural disaster that Maui has seen for a very, very, very long time. And I mean, when you consider that the Lahaina wildfires were just themselves, this is not counting the upcountry ones, the ones that are still, by the way, burning. We never really fully got our wildfires out yet. But when it comes to just the Lahaina one, the event on August 8th, 2023 was actually the deadliest wildfire in 127 years of U.S. history. So just to tell you the scale of the disaster, it was big. Now, because of the scale of that disaster, it also led to a lot of people here on island being just traumatized. One, because I have explained this in a previous episode of this podcast, we are all kind of within 6 or 7 degrees of each other. The people that live on Maui, we all know everybody. So when these victims' names started coming out, when the properties that, and the homes that we had known that had been there forever and ever, some that, you know, we've probably hung out in, these places being gone, these places being wiped out, literally affected most of the population here. Okay, you know, you have your recent transplants and stuff that haven't formed that communal bond, but for the most part, yeah, the entire island kind of received a little bit of trauma in the backlash, or should I say the aftermath of the events of August 8th. Now, that is where a term comes in that if you've never heard it before, you can probably understand what it means just by breaking down the two words that make it. See, even if you don't live on Maui, and this has been kind of one of those phenomenon that I have seen over and over again on Instagram, on TikTok, even people discussing it on Facebook and X and all of that. God, X. Oof. Anyway, the thing is, is that everybody keeps talking about sharing stories about sharing videos and images and accounts of the events of the wildfires here on Maui. And that has led to something called vicarious trauma and almost like an outbreak of it for everybody that's connected to the story. Now, like I said, you can figure out what it is just by me telling you the two words, vicarious, pardon my English, trauma. But if you didn't know, Okay, if you need, like, you know, the wiki on this, it is called a secondary trauma. You can also say a, like, technical name, secondary traumatic stress. So what that is it's an emotional and a psychological effect that's experienced by individuals who are indirectly exposed to traumatic experiences of others. Now, there's a lot of ways it can happen. It can happen by you, sitting there in front of your computer. And when you hear about disasters, and some people are just like this. I don't know why, but some of us are just wired like this. In the event of a mass shooting, in a natural disaster, in the aftermath of Maui's wildfires, people will almost immerse themselves in the imagery and stories and discussions all around traumatic events. So when you do that, when you do that, like, especially when you know somebody that personally went through those traumatic events, you're not just witnessing it through, like, the looking glass. No, you know somebody that's in it. You can actually kind of take their trauma into your own emotional state. It's called vicarious or secondary trauma because you didn't experience the primary event, the thing that caused the trauma in others. You weren't there personally, but because of your proximity to somebody or your emotional and psychological attachment to those events, images, videos, audio, whatever have you, you can actually have a traumatic response. Now, I know that seems weird. You're thinking, no, come on. You have to, like, kind of be right up against something bad for there to be some sort of trauma response. And that is so, so wrong when it comes to, mental health, period, but also vicarious trauma. So if you are one of those people right now in the audience that, ever since the events of August 8th, especially if you are somebody that listens to this podcast from Maui, I want you to pay very close attention to what I'm about to tell you, okay? If you are the type that has, ever since the event of the Maui wildfire, if you are the type that has over and over and over again sought out imagery, sought out videos, news reports, writings, blogs, social media posts, all about the terribleness of the Lahaina and greater Maui wildfires. If you are one of those people, I need you to stop. Because whether you realize it or not, that sadness that you feel, that worry that you feel, that almost in overpowering anxiety that you have wanting knowledge about things happening here on Maui, that is a traumatic response. I think it's traumatic response, but it is you actually having secondary trauma or vicarious trauma without knowing it, but you're feeding the beast basically by your behavior, okay? Now, I'm going to tell you in just a bit, like, a little bit more about this vicarious trauma. But first, I really need to explain that there are multiple things here in play. And one group could be considered your trauma people. The other ones can be considered your fatigued people. And then there's the third group of burnout. And these are all the groups that are going to come to light in the weeks and months and years after Maui is well into its recovery. Okay, the vicarious trauma ones, I think I've thoroughly explained that group. These are people that basically were not immediately close to the event of the wildfires, but still have developed trauma through their witnessing or, you know, sharing of stories and things like that. There's also going to be the folks that are going to have compassion fatigue. Now, you know how your mother and your father, or your auntie, your uncle, your grandfather, whatever primary caregivers you had in your life, you probably remember that a long time ago in your childhood, they would tell you little sayings like, oh, there's only so much care that you can give others before you have to take care of yourself, you know? That was a warning to you about the condition of compassion fatigue. This is when you have given so much emotional giving. You've given so much emotional support, so much physical support that the exhaustion on both of those fronts sets in because you have repeatedly engaged in empathic responses to the suffering and trauma of others. Now, typically, compassion fatigue is seen in like your healthcare providers, your first responders, your hospice caregivers, and people of that nature. But it also can come up in the aftermath of volunteers and organizations that are trying to recover from a natural disaster. Okay, we saw a lot of compassion fatigue in the aftermath of 9/11. We saw compassion fatigue set in throughout, God, the hundreds of school shootings that we've had here in the United States. But this is from prolonged exposure to that distress and to the, you know, the urgency of trying to help and be supportive of others, so much so that you've burned out. Well, not you've not you're not burned out. You're just how do I say this in a country music lyrical kind of way? Your give a damn is busted. Yeah. Now, burnout, like I said, is a little bit different. This is when you've just been going and going and going and going and going for so long that you just have nothing left. Okay? We're talking about, like, compassion fatigue is something that can set in relatively quick. Like, you can develop, like, if you were to become a nurse in, you know, a pretty rough environment, you could probably develop compassion fatigue within a matter of weeks. Burnout is something that hits the heartier folks. It's the thing that comes after a prolonged exposure to these emotional Olympics that you go through, trying to be empathic and supportive of others, right? Now, it can manifest in feelings of, like, reduced motivation, sense of detachment, lack of emotional response to, like, you know, things that used to bring you joy. Burnout is not exclusive to people in a disaster response. I mean, you can have that at your job. Like, you can just one day be like, you know what, I've had it. My heart's not in this anymore. I'm over it. I'm done. That's burnout, and that takes a little bit longer than compassion fatigue to set in, all right? Now, remember how I said I wanted to go back, and now that we've defined those three different things, I wanted to tell you a little bit about trauma, because one of the things that people always overlook, whether it be a primary trauma or a secondary trauma, that's the vicarious trauma, folks, your body is an amazing creature because it stores chemically trauma in your body. Now, that is not some, you know, ooh, new ageism or thing. That's a medical fact. If you look at elevated levels of hormones in the body of people experiencing trauma and the fact that in a prolonged exposure to this trauma, the buildup of those hormones in the bloodstream, that is medicine. That is something that you can scientifically sit down, analyze, read papers about, and know that it is a real thing. Physically, your body stores trauma. So remember how I said, everybody that's kind of looking at things over and over and over again, I need you to stop, because if you do not stop, you are basically a cookie jar of sadness, okay? Let's stacked full of little chocolate chip morsels of depression. I mean, that is what you are. You need to, one, stop as much as you can exposure to traumatic events, and two, get a move on it. Your body stores trauma physically. So taking a brief walk, a quick exercise. I mean, the amount of like things that you can look up on YouTube just to get you to move your body a little bit is amazing. So yeah, I'm just recommending you need to move. All right. Now, for people that are first responders and helpers and volunteers and things like that, you're probably thinking, well, I move all the time. Yes, but you are moving in an environment that exposes you to those traumatic things. So, no. There is an internet saying that I absolutely love you millennials for coming up with, and it's called touch grass. Absolutely, positively love that, because as a kid, pre-internet, because I am a dinosaur, the pre-internet days, we would actually, when times were, you know, just a little rough, or you were just having a crap day, you would physically leave the comfort of your home. And I'm from a place called Bessemer City, so there was like wide open fields everywhere. And you would find one of these wide open fields far away from everybody, and you would literally lay down in the grass or the plants, sometimes to the annoyance of the farmers when it was the alfalfa fields. But still, you would just literally lay down in all of this nature, staring up at the sky. And the fact that some younger generation came along and said, that's called touch grass, I am here for it. Because that is one of the things that, psychologically speaking, is beneficial to you. In mental health, it's called green time. Okay, exposure to nature without a screen or anything in front of you. And whether or not you realize it, you vicarious traumatic sufferers, you need to do the exact same thing. Now, they recommend this to post-traumatic stress syndrome people. They recommend this to people that have, like, you know, experienced sexual violence, domestic violence, and things like that. I mean, you name a bad, bad traumatic event, and I can guarantee you part of that treatment will be see some nature. Now, especially because a lot of us, in the media, I should say, a lot of us in the media have had to see these pictures and images over and over and over again of the burnt out husk of neighborhoods that we know and love. And after a while, you stop believing that the world is green outside of that. You only see the dark grays and burnt and cinders and everything. There is no color to that misery. And you almost, and you too, you that watch these footages over and over again of the events here on Maui, you too can experience this. Your world loses color. You start to see everything's in blacks and grays and just. This is emotionally taxing on you. And if you don't believe me, I mean, I could do an entire episode on just the ways that your world is rocked by, well, the imagery of disasters. Now, for people that are, you know, not really exposed to the Maui wildfires, and you're just listening to the podcast because you thought it was interesting, a guy named Shaggy had a podcast, you probably remember the aftermath of 9/11. Same, as we say here in Hawaii. same. But look, I want to kind of leave this on a note, because I told you that, you know, there's physical storage of trauma, the different types of trauma, specifically the ways that you are probably giving yourself trauma, just not even being here on island, not even experiencing the way that we experience it. I mean, I can tell you personally that this weekend was the first time we got to see, me and my wife and my family, that we got to see our cousins who lost everything in Lahaina. And as much as we've talked to them, as much as we've corresponded to them, we haven't seen them face to face. And that was a moment for tears. It has been over a month, and it was still that emotionally real to us. And that might be as true to folks that don't live here on Maui, that have family and stuff, that are in constant contact with them. You feel a sense of relief, sorta. You kinda have some relief on your anxieties. But until that moment that, you know, you get to see them face to face, you will be holding on to a little bit of that trauma. So I just want to say, ending this on the happiest note that I possibly can, because I've been talking about some pretty depressing things for the last 21 minutes. Here's how it goes. Trauma is something that you, without a professional, can do something to alleviate. Okay, you can touch grass, you can take a walk, you can start talking to others, but that's a problem because if you talk too much to others, you could also give them vicarious trauma as well. So if there is a way that you, you know, can be very analytical of yourself and ask yourself, am I constantly tired? Do I have more anxiety than I did before? How am I sleeping? Is my appetite okay? Do I still find joy in the activities that I know and love? Because if you can answer all of those questions and it starts popping up more yeses than nos, that you're not sleeping and that you don't have an appetite and you don't enjoy your hobbies as much, you, my friend, might have some trauma. And that is something I strongly urge you to seek out professional care for. Because just like your mama, your daddy, your aunties, your uncles, your grandmama and your grandpapa told you growing up, you can't take care of others if you ain't taking care of yourself. I'll see you on the next episode. If you like this, subscribe, share, leave me a comment. Love you, mean it.